Welcome to The Word at First Pres. For my final sermon series of my time as a pastor at First Pres, we are doing a sermon series called Encore, the best of 2013 to 2023. These are some of the best sermons from all of my time here from all the various sermon series. Thanks for listening.
Now, let's get our bingo cards ready. As we read from Genesis chapter 6, verses 6 through 12. And the Lord was sorry that he had made humankind on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. So the Lord said, I will blot out from the earth the human beings I have created, people together with animals and creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the sight of the Lord. These are the descendants of Noah. Noah was a righteous man, blameless in his generation. Noah walked with God. And Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted its ways upon the earth. This is the word of the Lord.
All right, our second scripture reading is from the book of Genesis. Once again, we're going to continue on with this story. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. Now I am going to destroy them along with the earth. Make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in the ark and cover it inside and out with pitch. This is how you are to make it. The length of the ark, 300 cubits, its width, 50 cubits, and its height, 30 cubits. Make a roof for the ark and finish it to a cubit above, and make the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. For my part, I'm going to bring a flood of waters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die, but I will establish my covenant with you. And you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, your sons' wives with you, and every living thing of all flesh. You shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
So this is my last sermon series I'm going to be doing at this church. And maybe my last sermon series ever as a pastor. I don't know. We'll see what the future might bring. But this sermon series is called Encore, the best of 2013 to 2023. And what I've decided is that we're going to be taking sermons from the various series I've done over the years, and I'm plucking kind of what I think are some of the best ones out. And the best ones are kind of either based on feedback from you all, where you said, hey, I really like that sermon a lot, that was a good one, or it's one that I particularly liked and thought that was actually pretty good on my end, or it has something to do with the themes of what we're talking about, because there's overarching themes. So as you can see, we'll be going through each of these. There's nine of them up there. The 10th will be on August 27th, my last day, and that will be an original sermon. I have something very special planned for that day, so I hope that you can be there and be present for that one. But for the first sermon that we're going to do today, we're going to be going back to the very first series I did when I arrived at this church. It was a series on the book of Genesis. It was called Genesis, A New Perspective. And the idea behind this sermon series was that I believe that if you understand the book of Genesis, you can understand the rest of the Bible, because every single story in Genesis sets the stage for all the stories you read in the rest of the Old Testament and the New Testament. So I thought, oh my God, we'll go through the whole book of Genesis, everybody will remember every story in Genesis, and then we'll know what we're doing from that point forward. What happened in reality was that nobody remembers any of the stories, and all they remember is that book of Genesis is my favorite book of the Bible. That's what everybody remembers, right? That's it. And so that's become the running joke in the congregation for forever, is whenever we read Genesis, you hear the bingo card, or, oh, it's Alex's favorite book of the Bible. Now, when I first started, now you have to remember, I was 33 when I arrived here, and In the fall of that year, when we started, we were reading from the first 11 chapters of Genesis. This is the mythological portion of Genesis. So it's got the creation story. It's got Adam and Eve, Cain and Abel. But when I got to the story about Noah in the ark, that was the one where a lot of people came up to me afterwards and they said, oh my God, this sermon totally changed the way that I understand a lot of the Bible. And it was really interesting. Over the years, I've had people come to me over and over again and say, this particular sermon was the one that really got them on board with what I was doing. And kind of from this point forward, it did set a pattern. I went back and looked at it. It set a pattern for what would happen pretty much from that point forward. So I thought today, we come back to it. A lot of you were not here when I preached this sermon. And so this will be brand new for you, kind of like a brand new sermon, even though it was preached at the beginning in the fall. So Noah in the ark. Everybody here heard that story, right? Yeah, we've all heard it, have we not? Okay, so it's a story that is probably the most famous in the Bible, arguably the most famous story, because we teach it to children, don't we? And it's a great children's story because it's got a boat. It's got animals on the boat. They all get inside. They have a big party. There's a little bit of rain, and then afterwards there's a rainbow. What could not be better for children, right? Now, of course, we leave out the little detail that the reason why God's flooding the earth is to commit mass genocide. Like, we kind of leave that little detail out of things, right? But understandably so, because you don't want to tell children something before it's age appropriate. Would you agree? Right, of course you don't. But here's the thing. Most people, when they grow up, they never go back and read the actual text like what we did this morning. Their version of Noah in the ark is the version they were taught as children. So as a result, it creates a false association in people's minds. What do I mean by a false association? So when you're a kid and you hear the story of Noah in the ark, that seems totally plausible, doesn't it? That a guy could build a boat and could put all of the animals in the world on that boat. Does that seem feasible to you as a little kid? Of course it does, right? Now, when my boys were little, we had books with animals in them. Did you guys, for any of you got kids over here, do you guys have books with animals in them that you read, right? Now, those stories, like, or the little books, they have, like, lions and tigers and bears, oh my. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it has stuff like that so that they can see them. And you think to yourself, okay, like, these are the animals of the world. But in reality, it's a fraction of the species that exist. Would you agree? And then you grow up, you get to your high school biology class, and you realize that 30 boats couldn't hold all of the species that are on the earth. And so you come to a conclusion in your high school biology class. If you think back on Noah and the ark, and you think to yourself, that story is probably a fairy tale. And then you start going through this train of thought. And the train of thought is like this. Okay, if Noah and the ark is a fairy tale, and that's one of the most foundational stories that I learned as a kid in church, what does that say about the rest of the stories in the Bible? What does that say about Father Abraham? What does that say about Moses? What does that say about Jesus? And so you start to go through this process of thinking about it. Are these stories true? Are they real? And so you come to the rightful conclusion that they are fairy tales. Now, there's nothing wrong with fairy tales. As a child, like, we would read fairy tales to our children. Like, fairy tales are good. Why do we read fairy tales? They are moral stories, right? They teach us morality. But I can tell you right now, as an adult, I don't want to get up on Sunday morning and drag myself here to listen to a bunch of fairy tales. And I certainly don't want to teach my children things that aren't true. Would you agree with that? I can tell you that right now. And so, as a result, the church, because this is what they tend to do, they teach these stories word for word, they're losing relevance in our culture. The church has lost relevance, and there's a cultural divide. Do you know, by the way, how secular people look at what we're doing here? Like, do you know how they think about us? They think about us as being crazy. Like, just think about it for a second. So let's say you're out there, and let's say this story comes up. and they find out you go to church, and they say, do you really believe in the story of Noah and the ark? Now, what are you going to say to that? You have two choices. You're either going to say nothing, or you got to defend the story. And how are you going to defend the story? If you know anything about science. If you don't know anything about science, I guess you can defend a story, right? But if you don't know anything about science, what are you going to say? Or if you know something, what are you going to say? Well, yeah, I know that it's just a boat, and I know there's millions of species on the earth, and I don't know how they all could have fit in there. We just got to take it on faith, right? No, we don't have to take it on faith, actually. And this is the issue, is that for a secular person, they will sit there and they will say, seriously? Like, you really believe that that's true? And I think that that's what we don't realize, is that we come in, when you teach these stories word for word, you give no context, you give no explanation. It feels like you're disconnected from the real world. That's what it feels like. So I will tell you, and I'll admit this to you, very often when I'm out in public, I don't like admitting to people that I'm a pastor. Do you know why? Because unlike you guys can just say, yeah, I go to a church. As a pastor, whoa, as soon as somebody finds that out about me, what are they going to say? Oh, well, they're going to assume most of the time that if I'm a pastor, I believe everything in the Bible is literally true. And that means I believe that the earth is 6,000 years old, and that guy is crazy. That's how it is. And so for a lot of people on the outside of the church, because that's how they perceive it, they sit there and they say, going to church is not worthwhile. But you guys are here, are you not? So you clearly feel there's something worthwhile about being here. And most of you aren't crazy. I wrote that line 10 years ago. I've been proved wrong in some of that regard. And so my goal in preaching this sermon to you is to show you how a story like this, how you can approach it and how it can still be relevant to your life. Because what I want to have happen is if somebody were to approach you and to say, how can you believe in all that stuff? I want to give you a way to believe about it. Now, I'm going to step out of the sermon for a moment. In the normal sermon, the first sermon, I just kept going. I want to step out for a moment. What I'm about to do, which is I'm going to talk to you about the history behind knowing the ark, and then I'm going to talk about its relevance. This is essentially how I based all of my sermons from that point forward. That's like my method. And that was where people either they got on board or they broke with me at that point in time. They were like, okay. They either loved it or they were done. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. So, knowing the ark. The first thing you need to know about this story in the Bible, the story of the flood, is that this is not the only place where you find it is in the book of Genesis. In fact, it is found in a lot of different myths throughout the ancient world. So probably a good example of this is from Sumeria and Babylon. There is what's called the Epic of Atrahasis. So in the Epic of Atrahasis, there is a god whose name is Mammy. And Mammy forms human beings out of the clay of the earth. Does that sound familiar to you? You know that from Genesis chapter 2, where God does the same thing. These myths, they share from each other. All right, so humans are created from the clay of the earth. And then what ends up happening is the god Enlil, who's the god of sky and earth, gets upset at human beings because we're too noisy and wants to flood the earth to get rid of us. But thankfully, the god Enki, who sees what's coming, goes up and tells Atrahasis, hey, just so you know, they're about to flood the earth. Enlil's coming after you. And so you want to build this boat. You want to get a stable of animals on there and birds and save your family. So that's the story from the Epic of Atrahasis. But that's not the only one. There's others. Epic of Gilgamesh. Have you ever heard of that? I'm sure you have, right? So there's a character, Utnapishtim. So this character, Utnapishtim, he is told by the god A, E-A. I don't know how you pronounce that. So this god tells him that the gods are going to flood the earth because humans are too noisy. This is a big part of it, that we make a lot of noise and it really ticks the gods off. So do you remember all of the dimensions we read in the book of Genesis? Those dimensions of the boat? Those dimensions that E gives to Utnapishtim, exact same. Same dimensions of the boat. So what you can see is that our version of the story is a compilation of kind of different elements of that. So as you can see, The story itself is a story that appears over and over and over again. And when you have a story that appears that often in all of these creation myths, it's probably grounded in an actual event. The question becomes, what was that event, and how do we suss out fact from fiction? So that's what we're going to try to do. The first thing you have to do in doing this is we have to go to the context of the people of the day and time. So we're talking about something that happened around 8,000 years ago. So it's a long time ago that this happened. And we have to remember that we're working with a lot more detail about the world than they were at that time. When you guys were in classes growing up, did you have globes in your classroom? Absolutely did, right? You had globes. You could see the world. When you watch the evening news, you are literally seeing a satellite photo of the Earth, right? And that's how you're seeing literally the weather when it's shown to you every day on the evening news. We've even seen pictures of the Earth from the moon. Literally, that's the kind of information we have. We have way more information than the people at that time. What you have to understand is that for people 8,000 years ago, very often, they never traveled more than 15 miles from their home in their entire lifetimes. That's really important that you understand that. They never traveled more than 15 miles from their homes in their entire lifetimes. So the concept of the earth or the world from their perspective is very, very small. Yes? Okay. So when this story says that God flooded the entire world, what does that tell us? It tells us that it flooded the entire world from their perspective, which was not much compared to us. So what we know is that when God flooded the world, we're talking about an isolated area of the Middle East or Asia Minor. That's what we're talking about. So we're on the same page so far? Okay. All right. So the next thing that we need to talk about is that this was no ordinary flood. So we've all seen flood that's happened from rains, have you not? Yeah. Have you seen that? So recently out in California, there was flooding. Have you seen, I don't know, did you see the flooding out in Pakistan last year? Like, it was bad. In California, excuse me, 22 people died. In Pakistan, hundreds of people passed away. But you have to think about it. When we're talking about something like this, we're talking about something where not a dozen people died or even a couple hundred people. We're talking about loss of human life on a scale of tens of thousands of people. There's no way that this would have made it, this story would have made it into all these creation myths if it hadn't been absolutely disastrous in terms of loss of human life. And I think that's why when you read the story, it's always presented through the lens of God being angry at human beings, because the only way these people could rationalize that level of death is if God was punishing them for something that they had done wrong. So I don't think rains, which of course is what happens in the Bible, right? In the Bible, it rains for 40 days and then everything gets flooded, right? So that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something on par with like a tsunami from an earthquake. And there are fault lines that go through the Mediterranean Sea. So you can see that there are fault lines and plates that come up against each other. And in fact, they do cause earthquakes out in the Mediterranean Ocean. But the fact is that the Mediterranean is too small to create the type of flooding that we see perhaps in Japan. Do you remember in Japan in 2011? Or Indonesia, where, I mean, those were tsunamis that killed thousands and thousands of people. The Mediterranean is not big enough to do that. So if it's not rains and it's not tsunamis, the only other real option is to look at bodies of water that are here in this area of the world and ask, have they always been there? And so what ended up happening was a group of biblical archaeologists, they did something really interesting. They started dating the various stories of the flood. And what they found was an interesting pattern, which was the earlier the story, the closer the story originated to the Black Sea. And so they asked the question, Has the Black Sea always been there? So here's the theory. Here's the way it goes. In 5600 BC, it is believed that the Black Sea was actually a valley with a large freshwater lake around it, and that tens of thousands of human beings actually lived in that valley. And actually, go back one. Just go back one. You can see, do you see in the topography there? You can actually see it from space. Do you see that low area? That's the lake, by the way. All right, move forward again for me. Okay, so the belief is that, so there, just imagine that there's a low-lying valley. There's also, now if you also know this area, there's a landmass that separates the Black Sea from the Mediterranean Sea. Today we call this the Bosphorus Strait, right there. So the Bosphorus Strait is right down there. So here's what they believe. It's right next to modern Istanbul. Here's what they believe happened. Is that around 5600 BC, there was likely, before it broke through to the other side, it started to erode away. The Mediterranean starts to erode away this piece of land right here. And before it breaks through, just imagine you're a guy on the other side of that erosion point. You're living down there, you're living your life, you're in your house, and you see that there's water that starts to pour over into the valley. And you taste that water. And what is that water made of? It's salt water. That's not fresh water. And so you start to put two and two together. Maybe you go up, maybe you scout it out, you see what's happening, and you realize, well, hold on a second, this is not a good situation for me and my family. So it's not hard to imagine that somebody with enough foresight would see what's coming, built a boat, put his family and his livestock on that boat, and then when that landmass broke through, he floated up to the surface, and everyone else who was in that low-lying valley died from being drowned. And if you just imagine it, imagine the person who would be seeing that, the survivors of it. Maybe they saw that boat float to the surface. Maybe they were on the outside of it and they saw when it happened. Just imagine, you'd see this boat float to the surface and think about the bodies that you would see everywhere. I mean, they would just be all over the place. That's likely how it began. That's likely where the story comes from. Now, to prove this, two scholars, two geologists from Columbia University put their reputations on the line, because these are not biblical people. They went out to the Black Sea, and they took a submersible into the sea. And if you imagine that level of water kind of shooting through, what it would probably do is it would literally snap the trees like toothpicks. Like as it was coming through, all those trees would just get, bam, taken off. And so what you would see is you would see these tree stumps that have been snapped in half. And that is exactly what they found. They went down into the sediment. They took samples from those tree stumps that had been snapped. And what they discovered, they dated it back to the exact time when the story began to spread. So that is the story of Noah and the ark. The real story of Noah and the ark. Now the question becomes, okay, now most of you I know have not heard that sermon before. A few of you have. And most of you maybe don't remember it if you were here. It's 10 years ago. So the question becomes, so what? Like, it's great to learn about this, right? But so what? How does this make it relevant to my life? Because that's the problem, right? I just told you the history of it. Why is it relevant? Well, it's actually relevant in a number of different ways, but perhaps the most important way that it becomes relevant is what it teaches us about the world. Most people, they see the world from two very opposite, diametrically opposed perspectives. On the one hand, you have people who look at the universe as an accident. So basically, they believe that the universe is an accident. It's the result of random chance. That is why we are here, random chance. So you exist because of random chance. On the other side of it, over here, you have a God that creates and manipulates everything and is like the chess master that makes everything go forward. Whether you're on this side, which is the physicist, or you're on this side where you're the theologian, they basically believe the exact same thing. Do you realize that? which is that you have no control over your life. Literally, you are a pawn. You have no control over your life. The real story of Noah and the Ark speaks against that idea. So the first thing that the story of Noah and the Ark really tells us is that our world is governed by natural forces. That's just part of the way the world operates. And in the story of Noah and the Ark, what's that natural force? The natural force is that water erodes away against land. That's what happens. And what happened was, over a long enough period of time, it eroded through the Bosphorus Strait, and bam, it flooded everything. So here's the question in the story: how did the flood happen? Who caused the flood? In the scriptures, God did. Remember, there's three answers: God, Jesus, love. That was God. Okay? God flooded the earth. But what do we know from the real story? Did God flood that area? No. God didn't flood that area. That's just the physics of water. Okay? Number one. Number two, what this story tells us is that we have the choice to react to those natural forces. So Noah, or whoever this guy was, who was at that erosion point, he looked up and he said, "This is bad. And I need to do something about this." Now, in the story, do you know, like, usually in the story, everybody around him is like, "Why is this guy building a boat?" Right? It doesn't seem like he knows what he's doing. He sees it, he makes a decision, and he's like, "You know what? I'm going to make a decision, and it's going to change my life. I need to be able to do that." Which, of course, speaks to this idea in the story: why does God flood the earth? Why does it say? It says, because humans are evil. We're loud. Yeah, we're loud and we're evil, right? So God is trying to act, it's revenge on us, right? I've told you all this for the last 10 years. I do not believe God wants us to suffer. I do not believe that God would have killed all those people simply to make a point. Right? That's just not the way it works. The fact is, forces of nature, and you have a choice how you're going to react to it. So he saw the signs of what was coming. He saw those natural signs, and he reacted to it. And I really believe that God is speaking to us all the time, particularly through nature. God is speaking to us all the time. But you have to be able to pay attention to the signs. So, stop sign. When you're driving, what are you supposed to do? Stop. Have you ever blown through a stop sign?
Never.
Never done it, right?
3 seconds.
So, have you ever... And this is really important. Now, I know that sometimes we do the rolling drive-through of the stop sign. Not me, but you guys. And when you go, but have you ever gone through a stop sign and didn't realize after you went through it, oh my God, I didn't even see it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's happened to all of us at some point or another, right? Where you're distracted. So just imagine, essentially, this guy, Noah, he's looking up at this erosion point, and it's like a big stop sign to him. And he stops. He sees it. And he's like, oh my God, I got to go in a different direction. I got to do something differently. Whereas everybody else blew through it. And what happened to them? They got hit, right? Now, it's not that God, in the story, God speaks to him as like, hey, Noah, you got to build this boat and you got to do these things, right? That's not the way it works. The way God speaks to us is through signs that we see in the world. And I believe that God speaks to us all the time. The problem is we are often too distracted to see those signs in our lives. Very often we are far too distracted to actually see what God is pointing out to us. We got teachers in here. Teachers, raise your hands. All right, teachers, when your students are not paying attention in class, can you tell? Absolutely, just like I can tell when you guys aren't paying attention. So when your kids are not paying attention, you can tell when they get to test time what's going to happen. Are they going to do well? No, because they're not present. They're not in the moment. They're not seeing the things that are going on. The same thing is true for the signs in the world. You have to be present. You have to be paying attention. If you're up here in your head, if you're not there, you're not going to see it. And God speaks to us. The signs are there in the sense that it's all over the place. You just have to be able to see those things. Sometimes it's through nature. You can literally see it happening in nature. Sometimes it's through scripture. Sometimes it's through prayer. Sometimes it's through a comment that somebody else makes. Sometimes It's through a memory that you have. Sometimes it's through a dream that you have. I mean, literally, there are signs of things that God is putting in front of you everywhere. The question is, are you paying attention to those signs? Are you looking at them and understanding that you need to stop and go in a different direction? And I want to end with a very short story about a group of people who are paying attention to the signs in their lives and how that changed my life. So 12 years ago, there's a group of people who got together. They were called the Pastor Nominating Committee in this church. So, Pastor Nominating Committee, for those of you not familiar with it, those are the people who decide who's going to be the pastor of the church. Mike is not here this morning. I was hoping that somebody isn't. I don't think anybody in this room was part of that committee who was here. All right, so that group of people got together. They were, and by the way, that same group of people, or not the exact same, but another PNC will have to get together, by the way, to choose the pastor who will come after me. So that group of people got together, and they had to figure out who we're going to get. And I guarantee you, when they started that process, they were not thinking of me. Guarantee it. They were not thinking of some 33-year-old kid with 4 years of experience who they were going to bring in to run this church. They were thinking of somebody who was in their late 40s, early 50s. In fact, that's who they asked to do it first. And that person ended up turning them down, and then they went back to scratch, and you guys got me. So, but when they had to go back and start over again, they started looking at the signs. They said, okay, what's out there? What are we going to look for? And they came to a point where they had to stop, and they really had to step back and ask the question, what are we going to do? And when they gave me that call, I honestly, like 4 years in, I'm like, nah, it's not going to happen, right? You don't get to a church like this 4 years in. You don't get that opportunity very often, if ever. And I got that opportunity because they saw something in me. I saw something in you all. This has been the best experience. And I was hoping that one of them might be here today, but you can tell Mike this. Changed my life. Changed my life. You all are the best thing that's ever happened to me these last 10 years. And I'm so thankful that they could see the signs. And they were able to get, they could see the flood. They got on the boat and they took us where we are today. A year and a half ago, I saw a sign that came up in my life. And so I stopped and I started asking the question, do I need to go in a different direction? And that is the sign that God has given to me in my life, is that I need to stop, I need to go in a different direction. And the truth is that those signs are there in your lives. And I'm not saying you gotta leave your job and move on to something completely different. That's what's right for me. But what I am saying is that those signs are there in your life. You have to be able to see them. And if you're not willing to stop and slow down, you're gonna miss out on some opportunities that if you blew through them, you wouldn't otherwise have. So, my friends, my prayer for you is that you might slow down, that you might look at the waters, that you might see the floods that are coming in your life. And I hope that you might ask the question, what kind of boat should I build so that God can lead me to dry land? Amen.
Thanks for listening. And if you want to learn more about First Presbyterian Church of Arlington Heights, please visit www.firstpresah.org for more information on service times, directions, and to learn more about the First Pres family of faith.